Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just trying to make life in the rural city more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today I talked to Dr. Alexander Essex, an assistant professor of software engineering with a specialization in cybersecurity and applied cryptography at the University of Western Ontario. All that means is he's an expert on the concerns people have about online voting. This was a big area of interest in the past election, and not just in Guelph, as about 51 municipalities with online voting experienced technical issues on election day. What can be learned from these issues, and will they help or hurt the effort to reinstate online voting here? Security questions about online voting is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Now, around 6 p.m. on election day, several Ontario municipalities using online voting started to experience problems with their systems. For 90 minutes, voters in 51 cities and towns had issues logging on to cast their ballots. The next day, Dominion Voting Systems, who provided the software used for the election in all affected municipalities, explained the problem thusly. This load issue was documented, reviewed, and determined to be the result of a Toronto-based internet co-location provider placing an unauthorized limit on incoming voting traffic that was roughly one-tenth of the system's designated bandwidth. Dominion regrets the challenges that our system load issue posed for both election officials and voters alike in Monday's elections. We want to assure Ontario voters that we will work to ensure this problem does not occur in future elections. And that was from Kay Stimson, Dominion's Vice President of Government Affairs. But can they make such assurances? Alexander Essex argues that they can't. Not really. You may know Essex from his own appearance at Guelph City Council when online voting came up for decision in April 2017's council meeting, but he's one of the experts many people look to hear from in this growing field of online voting. Essex's stance is that there are still far too many unknowns to consider online voting reliable, or even for that matter, safe and secure, which was a term thrown around a lot in the Guelph campaign. Essex told the CBC this past April, an online election doesn't have the transparency there. It's not an evidence-based election the same way a paper ballot is. My preference would be to vote online, but with this specific problem, it turns out hand-counting paper ballots is the best solution we have. That's a computer expert arguing for paper ballots. So on this edition of the Guelph Politicast, when it comes to this specific problem, we take a deep dive with Essex on the complexities of online voting in terms of the technical and technological aspects. You'll be able to hear Essex talk in detail about the way cybersecurity works right now and why that might not be compatible with the way we expect an election to be run. And we'll hear what standards he would consider a priority for online voting as an expert in information security and data privacy. And finally, we'll talk about what Dominion's troubles and other cybersecurity threats on Ontario municipalities this year can teach us in helping to improve our efforts to keep our information secure. So I caught up with Alexander Essex by phone from his office at Western. Okay, so Alexander Essex, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Yeah, good morning.
I want to start with just maybe in terms of your expertise, a bit of clarity on this one thing. That we had one internet voting provider offering services to 51 different municipalities. And
yeah,
it made me think, like, the thing people always compare this to is the banking, the online banking. Would mm-hmm. there be such a circumstance where there would be any business that would use the same internet security provider, or a circumstance where 51 businesses of the same type, like a bank, would use the same internet security provider? Because that's, I mean, just from my perspective as a layman, that right off the bat seems like a security risk that you are using the same security as several, like four dozen other outlets, because if you can hack one, you can hack the others.
Yeah. So this, when we talk about online voting and cyber threats, one of the things that often gets lost is, like, what is actually happening underneath? What is the technology actually doing? Now, a lot of it's complicated, and a lot of it, to a general audience, frankly, boring. So when we talk about elections online, there's all of this, like, computer knowledge that would really be helpful to kind of explain why.
Right.
I mean, I'm talking about cybersecurity, and, you know, if you aren't familiar with some of the what's actually going on underneath, maybe you might not have that mental model to appreciate what's happening. So, for example, your cell phone is like, imagine somebody standing in the middle of a crowded room screaming at the top of their lungs. That's what your cell phone's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that when you think about it, it makes sense, right? It's just broadcasting. But, you know, I teach undergrad cybersecurity courses, and a lot of times the students, when they start the course, they don't have that mental model.
Right.
So with elections, with any web service, the data lives somewhere. The data goes somewhere. So when you connect to a website, something is happening. So the question is, well, what is happening?
Right.
Where is this data going? Where does it live? What's going on behind the scenes? Right. It's not just, you know, it's not just a big face on a screen. You know, behind the curtain, there's somebody pulling levers, and, you know, things are happening. So
right.
With what happened here in this case, or what happens with really any web service provider, is that you have a company that is providing some kind of, you know, software product or solution.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it was online voting. So you have a company that's, you know, writing software, providing services, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't make economic sense for them to own all of their computers necessarily. In many cases, it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
You know, it's like the classic economy 101, you know, you can make your own, you can churn your own butter, but it's a lot more effective if somebody that's really good at churning butter, like, just does that all day and does it really well. And then you just, you know, trade them for that butter with something that you're really good at.
Right.
So when you think about an election provider, what are they doing? They're running an election for like a week every 4 years. It wouldn't make sense for them to have all of that infrastructure.
Mm.
All of those computers, all of that server capacity.
Mm-hmm.
It just economically would be insane to buy all that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole argument of cloud computing. That's the whole purpose of cloud computing, is to provide that infrastructure for you in a way that you can rent what you need, and then when you don't need it, you're not paying for it.
Mm.
So it's a, you know, pay-as-you-go kind of model.
Right.
Instead of a big capital investment up front where you have a million servers and then you have to maintain them, they go obsolete and then you have to replace them. So it's about economics.
Right.
Also, it's about making the internet efficient, because, you know, every time you connect to Google to do a search, or you know, you connect to a website in the Bay Area, and, you know, in San Francisco, your packets, the little, you know, little messages that your computer sends over the internet would have to go all the way to San Francisco and back.
Right.
And so you would have everyone in sort of Ontario sending messages back and forth. Well, that's not really efficient. So a lot of the content that you get, a lot of the content that's like loaded a lot, right? So like the index page of a website, the like landing page, that gets loaded all the time. So you don't need to have it on a server in San Francisco to serve the people in Toronto. You can have it on a server in Toronto. And then when they make that request, it goes to this cloud provider. The cloud provider says, oh, yeah, everyone's been asking for that. I've got it all ready to go for you right here. Here you go.
Mm-hmm.
And for the more complex stuff, the more, you know, the sort of the dynamic requests, like, you know, here's a request, you have to go and do something with it. Then, yes, maybe then that will be sent on to the sort of the back end server.
Mm.
So what do we have so far? We have the company that provides the product. We have the cloud provider that sits in front that can help make things run more efficiently by kind of storing kind of things close to you. And they also provide protection against, you know, denial of service attacks.
Right.
And then finally, you have where the server lives, where the computer that all of the software that the company wrote, the computer that it's running on.
Right.
So, again, it economically, it makes more sense to just have all of these computers together in a large data center. So that's why they call it like a co-location providers, because all of these different companies have servers in you know, cages, and they're all together in a single geographic location.
Right. Okay.
So what happened on Monday night was, according to the vendor, was that the co-location provider put a bandwidth restriction on how much traffic could be sort of, you know, handled. And we don't know if it was accidental or what. We're kind of waiting to find out what actually happened. But it was dialed way down. So something inside of that co-location provider was just kind of choking all of the requests that were being made. I mean, because everyone's logging on after dinner to vote.
Right.
And so it's hard sometimes to tell the difference between a real, genuine, you know, just like explosion of interest in a website versus an actual malicious denial of service attack.
Right.
Now, in this case, you know, elections, it's well known that elections have these bursts of like genuine traffic. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. I mean, it's voting day for goodness sake. I mean, everyone knows that. Everyone in the vendor knew that.
Right.
But it seems there, you know, might have been some kind of miscommunication. So,
just to make it as dumb as humanly possible, so that people understand what happened was, what according yeah. to Dominion is that the co-location provider, which is this server group that basically running all the actual physical hardware, turned down the bandwidth to
yeah.
what they said was a tenth. And you yeah. said it was, you know, we don't know if it was intentional or unintentional, but basically it couldn't take in as much traffic as it should have been able to, so people couldn't log on and cast their vote.
Yeah, right. Sort of maybe an analogy could kind of, like, when you do physical analogies, like kind of real-world analogies, they're never really perfect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But maybe we can give you an idea here. Okay, so imagine that Dominion's like an army. You know, the head of Dominion's like the general of the army.
Mm-hmm.
And the cloud provider that sits out in front is like the Great Wall.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side of the Great Wall is, you know, like the wild internet. And then the co-location provider is kind of like the, you know, I don't know, the imperial palace that is in charge of doing all of the things. You know, they say what needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So what basically we're talking about here is there was supposed to be, let's say, 1,000 imperial staff, and then there was only 100.
Right.
So to handle the government, like running in this analogy, okay, mm-hmm. not a perfect analogy, but it kind of gets to the point that there's kind of like three different entities,
right.
kind of working together towards like the greater goal.
And this is one of the sounds like one of the key problems in this is that just the act of setting up internet voting involves three different entities, as you said.
Whereas, and the city itself, so there's four.
So in the city itself versus voting in person or mail-in ballots, even where it is city staff or, you know, people hired on a temporary basis by the city and the yeah. voter.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of what I've been trying to sort of do with kind of raising this issue, especially in public, is not necessarily to say you shall not do this, you mm-hmm. must not do this. I'm not trying to say that. But in my experience, many people are making, I'm observing many people sort of making sort of suppositions or decisions about this without actually maybe really appreciating what's going on under the hood.
Right.
And so I've been trying to kind of, you know, raise this issue to sort of kind of shine a light into this machinery a little bit. And, you know, I'll give you an example. Last year we did a study of the Western Australian state election.
Mm-hmm.
And they were using one of these cloud providers to do denial of service attack protection.
Mm-hmm.
So you hire this third party and they're going to protect you from all of the bad Internet of Things that, you know, all of the hacked refrigerators and stoves that like decide they're going to attack your election.
Right.
And they're really good at doing that. So these cloud providers, they're really good at doing that. But you have to ask yourself, how do they do, how, like, what is the way that they accomplish this?
Right.
Well, it turns out that if you're a Western Australian voter and you go to visit the website, right, what happens? Do you go to the Western Australian server? Well, the answer is, well, no, you go to the cloud provider server.
Right.
They decrypt the traffic. They inject a little program into the session that runs in your computer and fingerprints your computer, your browser, and sends that code to you.
Right.
So what that means is that when you vote, that data is passing through their server,
right,
in an unencrypted state.
Huh.
So what that means is that they have at least the technical ability to see how people are voting. Now,
right, they're not supposed to, but they could.
No, well, it's not that they're not supposed to. Of course, there's. I mean, well, I think they shouldn't.
Right.
But I mean, they don't see this as like a major issue.
Right.
Because this is how they run.
Right.
You know, and fair enough. Maybe you have to trust them. Maybe there's no other way to do this but to trust them.
Right.
Whatever. But we need to have an honest conversation about this. Like, I think it's like, okay, maybe you're okay, mm-hmm, with there being some, you know, foreign, you know, multinational company that has the ability to see how you voted. Now, I've talked to cloud providers and they say, well, you know, yes, but we don't actually look. It's on our server, but we don't look.
Right.
And we say, well, what if the, you know, NSA came to you with a warrant and said, give us the data? And they say, yeah, well, that's never happened. And we would fight it if it was. And I said, you know, well, how would we know that happened? Because they can, you know, issue like a FISA warrant and it's secret and we never find out. And they say,
right,
oh, yeah, well, we have legal tools. But besides, it would be damaging to our business model if it ever came out.
Right.
Okay, fine. Maybe you're okay with this. But before you can decide whether you are okay with this, you have to know that this is what's happening.
Right.
And I don't think many people realize this, that their data is passing through the server of some third party that is owned by some company outside of Canada.
Right.
And it's passing through in an unencrypted state.
So let me try and dumb this down again. So we have these cloud servers, these third parties that are basically sound like a surge protector, right? Because the DDoS attack is essentially people flood the website in an effort to shut it down.
Yeah. And we've seen this in some of the, like, leadership races, for example, like,
right,
the NDP leadership race. We've seen actual denial of service attacks against them. And so,
right,
that's why you need a cloud provider to prevent that. And
right,
they're good at doing it.
Right.
But you have to, you know, it's like you have to sort of pay the piper, so to speak, by kind of giving them privileged access to, you know, what's being sent.
Right. But what we have here is that in an effort to stop one security concern, we create another security concern.
Well, you know, like you've heard of the notion of a wicked problem.
Yeah.
Right? So you fix one thing and it causes another problem. That's voting. Voting is a wicked problem. Online voting, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, any voting really is wicked in the sense that, you know, if you use paper ballots, well, I mean, there are some legitimate objections to paper ballots,
sure,
hand counted paper ballots. Like, you know, it's you have to go into the polling place. You know, it's not as convenient. It's not maybe a good thing for every voting context. I mean, it's not as versatile.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know, totally get it. But, you know, if we're going to use online voting, it's like, okay, maybe okay, I'm not sure, but let's have that honest conversation about what it means. You know, how do you count the votes? Like, how does the candidate scrutineer get to scrutinize the counting of the votes?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, if you go and read the election procedures for some of the cities, it looks like this. There's a vote, the vendor shows up and they got a memory card, like in a kind of like a security envelope.
Right.
And they give it to the clerk. The clerk opens it, sticks it into a computer, like a city computer, and the results get tabulated and the winner gets declared.
Right.
And so it's like, if I'm a scrutineer and I'm watching this, like, what did I witness? You know, why would that ceremony be something that I should sort of be confident in the outcome of.
Right. I feel like we're almost already going this way, though, with when you consider in the municipal election and the provincial election, we were already doing like the Scantron ballots, which,
yeah.
I mean, I guess the paper copy is still available.
But... Yeah, well, there's a problem with that in Ontario specifically, which is that the Municipal Elections Act says that if there is a recount,
mm-hmm.
What you have to do is take all of the paper ballots and you have to rescan them again
mm-hmm.
using the same machine that you used the first time and use those memory cards again to retabulate the election. And furthermore, you are not allowed to look at the paper as you're doing it.
Huh.
So in a sense, we do have 100% electronic voting in Ontario insofar as even when we have paper, we're not allowed to actually look at it
right.
if there was a recount. And, you know, in the U.S., for example, they're doing a lot of work with something called risk-limiting audits, which are a way to do manual recounts without mm-hmm. having to recount the entire thing. Their ballots are way more complicated than ours, so they really need this.
Mm.
But in our case, there's really not like a technical reason why we couldn't do manual recounts.
Right.
So, I'm hoping that the Ontario government will eventually revisit the issue of manual recounts because, you know, at the end of the day, the prevailing opinion of, you know, voting technology experts like around the world is that in a paper ballot election like that, the paper is the truth.
Right.
Not what the scanner says, what the paper says.
Mm-hmm. I think that's... Well, I won't make a comment about the current Ontario government, but I do want to address one more thing concerning Dominion and what happened in the municipal election, which is that a lot of people are reporting that it was the municipalities telling Dominion there was a problem and that Dominion wasn't aware there was a problem until they heard it.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing, yeah.
That seems like a big... white flag because, I mean, sometimes when I have problems with the internet, if it's too slow, if I can't connect, I assume it's, like, my provider because, you know, that happens, or I assume it's my computer, and maybe I shut down and restart, and maybe that fixes the things. It just seems like it's a pretty big hole that the person providing the service isn't aware that there's this issue with the service until they are told by, essentially, the customer.
Well, you know, I was reading that the CEO of Intellivote was saying, you know, he kind of felt bad for what happened to his you know, business rival.
And, I'm sure he feels very bad.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I think, at the end of the day, you know, we're all Canadians here. I mean, well, Dominion's kind of multinational now, but, mm-hmm. I mean, we all want what's best for the country, and we want Canada to be the best it can be, and so... You know, it kind of gets lost in the news cycle sometimes that, like, we're all really on the same side here.
Right.
Like, the hackers are out there. We're all here, and we're all on the same side. I mean, I think that's the thing that I want people to understand, even when the rhetoric kind of gets a little heated and it's sort of, you know, like, oh, internet voting for everyone, and then, you know, this computer scientists say internet voting for no one. We all are after the same thing, and we all really need to work together on this. What happened with Dominion... frankly, I don't see this as being necessarily something that is, you know, specific to them. I don't really feel that. I mean, maybe, okay. I mean, I think, you know, sometimes shit happens.
Right.
And, you know, you might say, well, but this is an election. It has to be high assurance. You cannot have these kinds of things happen. I've been hearing, you know, for example, I was reading that the mayor of Sudbury was saying that, you know, he's kind of just like outraged by what happened. And, you know, I guess I would say if you think that a 90-minute service slowdown is bad,
right?
You know, imagine how you would feel if the election was actually hacked and the results were changed. Even
right.
if you found out about it. What if the election was not even hacked at all? But there was something that happened that caused people to doubt the outcome. And of course, you know, we don't have that transparency there to really know what's going on with the vote counts. It's not like we can watch the paper get counted up in front of us.
Right.
You know, that would be bad.
Yeah.
What we had happen here on the scale of like 1 to 10, you know, like, I mean, I don't know where you would want to put it on the scale of 1 to 10, but it was not a 10.
No.
Not. It could be so much worse than it was. And I feel like, you know, that there's that needs to be taken into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you are like this sensitive about a glitch in online voting, maybe online voting's not right for you.
Right.
For your, you know, for your city. I don't know. I mean, that's maybe something to discuss because it can be worse.
Right. What happened here was sort of maybe a failure of tech, maybe a human failure at the source.
I've heard stories about co-location providers, you know, going to set bandwidth limits and they're typing in how much bandwidth and they, you know, maybe like human error, they leave off a zero.
Yeah.
So it ends up being a tenth.
Right.
And when they were reporting it being one tenth of what it was supposed to be, I was thinking, oh, maybe they left off a digit by accident. I mean, this kind of stuff happens. I mean, there are lots of cases of this. And to your point about, well, why didn't they notice? This reminds me a lot of what happened in Washington, D.C. in 2010. So Washington, D.C. was trialing a municipal online voting system.
Mm-hmm.
And so my colleagues at the University of Michigan actually found a command line injection vulnerability in the source code, which they used to gain root access to the server. So root access means that they have total control.
Right.
And they actually changed the ballot candidate names to those of evil robots. and what they did is when you voted, they played the Michigan marching band song.
Mm-hmm.
And so it went unnoticed by the election officials for like about a day. And they were getting calls from people saying, you know, we like your voting system, but what's up with that music? And they said, oh my goodness. And they went and they looked and they saw that they were hacked. So, you know, like there is at least one other, you know, example where this did happen. And you know, I think lessons will be learned from this. But even if the lessons are learned from it, like what does it mean in the broader scheme of things, right?
Right.
Like, okay, well, we're not going to have the co-location provider, like that's fixed. We will not have this problem ever again.
Right.
Okay. But what does it mean for everything else? Does it mean that now it's safe? Now it's transparent. Now the, you know, ballot secrecy is better. I mean, you know, there's always going to, like, this issue is not going away.
Right.
I mean, like I'm a tenure track professor. Like, it's possible that I'll still be doing this in 30 years. I mean, and even if I'm not, we'll, you know, all y'all will still be talking about it in 30 years.
Right.
It's not going away. And by all accounts, it will get worse. So, you know, I think that we need to sort of be honest with ourselves about that and try to take the cybersecurity, like, I know here I am, I'm a professor, you know, thumping the textbook, you know, study the fundamentals, you know, do your homework.
Right.
Somebody somewhere needs to sit down and try to like draft up a like kind of a list of like requirements for an online voting system. You know,
right.
Here are the 10 things that you need. Maybe it's not secure, but, you know, like at least if you're going to do it, do these 10 things.
Right, because that was something I was reading an article the CBC did with an interview with you, and you point out that there's no standards of what internet voting use looks like, and that, you know, we have 445 municipalities in Ontario, and we could theoretically have 445 different sets of standards for internet voting.
Yeah, well, so there's 194 municipalities using online voting,
mm-hmm.
and the Municipal Elections Act gives you one standard for paper. We have one standard for paper ballot voting.
Right.
But then we have 194 cities doing online voting, so we actually have 194 different sets of procedures. And, you know, I get it, right? The, you know, regional autonomy is important in the Ontario context,
mm-hmm.
right? It's what, when I've said in the press that it's a wild west of voting, what I don't mean is that, you know, we should send in the cavalry. That's what I don't mean.
Right.
Because it's, you know, it really is important for cities to have their own autonomy, to make their own decisions about this. Mm-hmm. But it's a double-edged sword. It cuts both ways, right? So on one hand, yes, let's leave the municipalities to make their decisions. That's an important thing politically in Canada, and as well in Ontario at least. So I'm happy to be respectful of that. But then the sword cuts in the other way, which says that, you know, if you're a small town mm-hmm. and you're trying to navigate one of the greatest open challenges in cybersecurity, like, all due respect, you know, it's a, you know, you're going to, you could really use some help. Mm-hmm. For example, you know, let's say that there was an epidemic that broke out, heaven forbid. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't leave municipalities to their own devices to develop a vaccine, for example. The problem is just too big.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it would be helpful if there was some kind of provincial or federal agency, mm-hmm. independent agency that was able to help municipalities on a voluntary basis, if they want it,
mm-hmm.
to provide them with guidance and maybe actually even do things like certification and testing.
Right.
They have this in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of like, you know, assistance agency. It's called the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, the EAC.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that the EAC doesn't do is tell states what to do, right? Because, you know, states' rights, they get to decide for themselves.
Yep.
But they are experts in election technology, and they have a lot of resources. They kind of pool their resources federally to provide that guidance to the states. And the states can decide for themselves, you know, yeah, we're going to go with what the EAC wants, recommends, or we're going to do our own thing. Well, if they do their own thing, you know, it's their right, but then if something goes wrong, then people will say, well, why didn't you go by the standard? And then that's a conversation that can be had.
Right. So the analogy here is that, you know, we could have the province or the federal government come up with the vaccine, but it'll be up to each municipality in terms of how they administer the vaccine.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, like, again, as I was saying before, you know, like, we're kind of in an interesting position in mm-hmm. Ontario, because on one hand, you know, we can't, like, I have no standing in any of the cities except for the city of London, Ontario, because I'm a resident, I'm a voter in London, Ontario.
Right.
But in all these other cities, I'm just some random person. And so I can't very well go and tell them, you know, this is what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've been doing this for over 10 years, and I know lots of people internationally, and there's a lot of people out there that can help and want to help lend their expertise to making us all safe, or as safe as possible. And, you know, so what that means is that, you know, despite your view on online voting,
right,
you know, you're pro, you're against, or whatever, it's happening. And it's probably not going to stop, at least at the municipal level.
Right.
So, you know, there's this old idea of, like, if you can't beat them, join them.
Right.
We need to work together to make things, I think, a little bit more transparent. You know, if we had standards in this province,
right,
especially, you know, again, voluntary standards, but it would benefit everyone.
Yeah.
It would benefit the cities, because they would have some, you know, some sort of like checklist that they could, you know, that they could reference of things that they could ask the vendor about. You know, I think that, you know, they're not going to necessarily think about everything, right? Because it's a complex
mm-hmm.
issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would help them with their RFPs and their procurement. It would help the vendors, because, you know, when I talk to vendors, you know, they'll say to me, like, well, we would like to invest in making more secure technology, but there's no market for it,
right? Right?
Because if there's no standards requiring certain security things, then if your city making a decision about what vendor to go with, your main sort of differentiator is going to be cost.
Right.
So if it's just about cost, then it kind of becomes a race to the bottom.
Right.
And so, you know, I've talked to vendors who have said, literally, we want to do more, but it's hard for us to, you know, make a business case to do more until mm-hmm. we have some standards.
So
the third thing is that it's going to help the voters, because in principle anyway, it's going to give them some reassurance that,
right,
you know, that everybody is doing everything they can. I mean, all of these issues, you know, like the cloud provider seeing how you voted and stuff, that's all out there on the table, right? It's you know, it's all been, you know, it's like there's been a comprehensive assessment, and, you know, they can, in principle, contribute to the standards development process. Like in the United States, they have a technical guidelines development committee that composed of like experts from around the country. And they go and they talk to people internationally. You know, I've talked to them. They say, hey, here's some standards that we're coming up with. How are we doing? Do you have any, do you see anything that's missing here? Could we do better? You know, it, and it, that's the attitude that we need to kind of get here, is like, let's do everything that we can to make it as safe as possible. And yeah, that's where we're hoping to go with this in the long term, you know,
right?
Because again, it's not going away.
Yeah, no, it just, the debate here, because a lot was made of the fact that Guelph was the only municipality that had online voting in 2014 and then decided not to have online voting in 2018. But there were a lot of candidates here, and I don't describe any malicious intent, but they were talking about safe and secure online voting and bringing that back. And what is sort of required, just from my own sort of research and from talking to you, is that it's not a matter of getting the votes to bring online voting back. It's a matter of deciding, you know, making sure everyone's well informed about what the risks are and deciding where to draw the line in terms of the risks.
Yeah. And I mean, if we, you know, given that the political reality on the ground is that the cities are making their own decisions about alternative voting methods,
right,
then, you know, then what that means is it's not about, you know, banning online voting versus allowing it.
Right.
It's about letting them make their own decision, but somehow we've got to give more resources to them to allow them to make the best decision they can.
Right.
You know, if you're Toronto, if you're Markham, you know, you can hire like outside experts to come in and really, you know, spend some time to look at it.
Right.
But if you're, you know, if you're Meaford, if you're Leamington, you know, you don't have that kind of, you know, you don't have that kind of city resources. And right. So kind of what we have right now is a situation where, you know, maybe some of the larger towns kind of have maybe a bit more of an advantage at looking at this than some of the smaller towns. Let's level that playing field.
Right.
There's no reason why we couldn't. And it seems like perfect sense that we would. And they're doing it in other countries already.
Right.
So, you know, it just seems like a no-brainer.
So it might be a matter of, if you're a proponent of online voting, you might have to also be prepared to shell out the money, at least on the municipal end, to make sure that you can, as promised, as delivered, the safe and security, the safety and security.
Well, you have to come up with, first of all, before you can hire a vendor to provide it, you have to articulate to yourself what it means to you for a system to be secure.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, the other dimension to this is that, and this is the part that everyone seems to always forget, is that it also has to be transparent. Like, the voters have to believe that the result is genuine. Even if the result is correct and they don't believe it, then, you know, you're not farther ahead. So I think the issue's kind of been simmering under the surface because many people like kind of just have sort of accepted the papers having sort of a degree of transparency, and they haven't really looked at the online version to realize that it doesn't have that same transparency. Like, it's not as obvious to know, like, what happened. You can't look into the software to know that the software that maybe was certified is the actual software that's running.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not really a lot of public evidence that's being output to convince, you know, people that their vote counted. Now, I'm not saying that that there's any malfeasance at all.
Right.
But, you know, that doesn't matter. That's not what it's about. It's about, you know, confidence in the system, and you build that confidence and you maintain that confidence through, you know, transparency. So that has to go in the requirements too. And mm-hmm. So if you're kind of coming up with your own requirements, okay, you know, again, it's, you know, do it if you want, but, you know, we're trying to, you know, we want to, like, let's try to be as thorough about this as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Let's, like, sit down and figure out everything that we could possibly want. And then the cities at that point can make the assessment about the risk that they're willing to tolerate.
Right.
Because when I do these interviews, it'll often go like this. I'll say there are, fundamental, security issues with online voting that just haven't been addressed.
Right.
Like anywhere in the world to a level of satisfaction that somebody that knows how the technology works would be comfortable with. And then there'll be a city official who responds with a quote saying, well, we're satisfied it's secure.
Right.
And then so it always goes, so we say it's secure and then I say it's not secure. And it's like, well, what does it mean to be secure? I mean, it's
right.
like let's articulate that.
Okay.
And like get down to the itty bitty details.
Right.
So there's all the cards are on the table,
Right. And maybe I'll leave this here, but there's a lot of talk about sort of who might present a danger to online, like in terms of the bad actors. And one of the things I was struck on this year is that we've had incidents of attacks here in Ontario, Midland, their encryption keys were basically held hostage by hackers. The one that fascinates me, though, is what happened in Cambridge back in February, where the guys were, the hackers in question were data mining for cryptocurrency, and they seized the Cambridge website. There's been a lot of talk about Russians and, sort of Joker figures who want to burn the world down. But is it like the cryptocurrency miners that we really have to be worried about? These people who don't really seem to have any openly malicious intent, but are just sort of using the internet for their own, petty, capitalist goals, mining for cryptocurrency versus, just bad actors trying to muck up the democracy.
Well, when this happened to Cambridge back in the winter, I went to speak to council and, I talked about that and I said, look, first of all, the important thing was the Cambridge IT staff didn't do anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And they still had this happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So all I was saying was like, how is it possible to do everything right and still have this happen? Well, that's just the way the cookie crumbles on the internet. And so, maybe we need to think about that in the context of online voting. So yes, having somebody like cranking your CPU and like burning a little bit extra electricity in your house is by itself maybe not that big of a deal. But what it points to is, what's possible, what else is possible.
Mm-hmm.
With these malicious state actors, I get this a lot when I've been talking to cities that are using online voting. They'll say, well, there was a CSE report that said that the threat to cities from state actors is low.
Mm-hmm.
So they say, look, our threat is low. And, on one hand, that may be true.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably right in the sense like, well, what does Russia care about? Like little old, small town Ontario.
Right.
On the other hand, right, there is this principle in sort of IT security, which is that if you see it on the internet happening, some version of it is going to be happening in your environment at some point. Your network and your enterprise environment is a microcosm of the wider internet.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I sit on committees, cybersecurity committees with the universities. And, we have state actors in the university networks doing things. They're not like, doing operations like Stuxnet and like spinning uranium centrifuges out of control to like, halt nuclear. It's not like that, but they are there.
Right.
And they are doing shit. So to say that they won't come to small town Ontario, but they have been going everywhere else, I think is, maybe not exactly... I don't know. I don't think that you can guarantee that.
Right.
Again, what you see on the internet and what happens in your enterprise environment, they're going to be related. If you're seeing it out there, you're going to see something like it in here too.
Right.
So, that's something that I think that, we need to be honest about. And maybe we're okay with that because maybe, we've assessed the risk and we're fine. But like, let's get the risk assessment correct.
Right. All right. Well, I'm not sure we resolved anything, but I think that's a good place to start. And you know, maybe we can do some. I presume that there's going to be another debate here in Guelph once the new council gets settled. And
you know, I came to Guelph the night that it was voted.
Yeah, I was there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, it was a pretty interesting interesting experience, but. You know, I wish your city well with that debate, because, you know, yeah, again, it's not going away.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be having this debate probably for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's try to like put the partisan politics aside and work together. Because remember, the bad guys are out there. Okay, we're all Canadians here, so we're all on the same side. So let's work together. That's kind of, I think, my message to, you know, Ontario and yeah.
Absolutely. But I was just trying to say, like, maybe there might be an opportunity to do some kind of follow-up later once the debate sort of really gets cooking here. But I didn't want to strike while the iron was hot after everything that happened Monday,
for sure.
Too.
I mean, I'm not, like, so I, you know, I've never spoken at a city council where I wasn't invited by the staff or the residents to come. But, you know, they're kind of testy. And, you know, I'm not a politician. I'm just some engineer. And I get, you know, kind of getting politically rattled by it. So, I think that you guys need to have your own debate and, you know, good luck with it. So.
Well, Alexander, thanks so much for your time and for your expertise. And we'll catch up later down the road.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
And once again, that was Dr. Alexander Essex. You can find out more about his work and his research at essex.cc. Expect online voting to come up for discussion again in council, as many of the people who won had promised to work towards its reinstatement, and you'll be able to follow all the ins and outs of that debate on Guelph Politico. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics, Ed Siddale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. Go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And you can help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph by donating to Guelph Politico. And to find out how, you can go to guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And thank you to everyone who has donated and continues to donate to the cause. For all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where we'll have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.